Good afternoon. From the KTOO Newsroom in Juneau, I'm Yvonne Cremery. Juneau Assembly members Christine Wall and Alicia Hughes-Scandies say they do not plan to run for re-election this fall. Wall announced her plan to step down during the Assembly's meeting on Monday night, and Hughes-Scandies told KTOO in an interview earlier today. Both say they want to spend more time with their families and enjoy their free time. Hughes-Scandies was first elected to fill a partial term in 2019. She and Wall were then elected to their first full terms in 2020 and re-elected in 2023. Hughes-Scandies says it's been a hard but rewarding job.
I've loved my time on the Assembly. I'm proud of the time that I've had there. But it's a tremendous amount of work. You know, it's a tremendous amount of time.
During their time on the Assembly, both tackled difficult topics like the COVID-19 pandemic, cruise ship tourism management, and housing development. Both were a part of the cohort of Assembly members in 2022 who originally voted against the controversial plan to purchase a used gondola for Eagle Crest Ski Area, a plan that has since been canceled. Wall chairs the Assembly Finance Committee and helped navigate the Assembly through this year's difficult budget-making season. Hughes-Scandies chairs the Assembly Lands, Housing, and Economic Development Committee, tasked with exploring potential housing projects and development ideas across the borough. In separate interviews, both say they are most proud of their efforts to prioritize more housing development in Juneau, though they noted the work is far from done. Wall says despite the challenges of being an Assembly member, she encourages people to throw their hat in the ring or get involved with city government in other ways, like joining a board.
I would definitely encourage people that think about our community's future, whether they like where we're headed or not, to get involved, because otherwise other people will make those decisions for you.
Assemblymember Paul Kelly's seat is also open this fall. Kelly, who's up for a second term, has already filed for re-election with the Alaska Public Offices Commission. The filing period for the seats on the Assembly and the school board opens July 17th. Election day is October 6th. The Juneau Assembly voted Monday night to undo a controversial funding scheme that required some homeowners in the glacial outburst flood zone to pay thousands toward the initial stretch of the Mendenhall River flood wall. As KTOO's Alex Solomon reports, the change begins to address fairness issues, but some homeowners say it doesn't go far enough.
Last year, the Juneau Assembly passed a funding plan to split the original cost of building the flood wall with around 450 landowners in the Mendenhall Valley flood zone. It's called a Local Improvement District, or LID. The city would pay 60% of the cost, homeowners would pay 40%. Most households would have had to pay up to $6,300 to help protect their homes using sand-filled blocks called HESCO barriers. But now the Juneau Assembly has decided the city will cover most homeowners' portion of the LID. The decision helps resolve a central issue Valley residents have raised about fairness. Many landowners who weren't required to pay for the flood wall were likely protected by it during the record-breaking flood last year. Debbie Penrose Fisher, a Valley resident who leads a flood advocacy group, testified in favor of the amended ordinance at the Assembly meeting.
This is a chance to correct this inequity and to build a bridge between us.
But Penrose Fisher takes issue with a part of the ordinance that still requires four property owners to pay $50,000 each for armoring their section of riverbank with large boulders called riprap. Unlike other property owners, these four didn't do so prior to the flood wall proposal. City Manager Katie Kester says the ordinance will help the city move toward answering a broader question about ongoing flood costs.
How do we fund HESCO barrier maintenance, annually to the tune of $6 to $12 million for this community? And how do we do that in a fair way?
The cost of the flood wall has ballooned. Repairing and raising the wall this year alone costs an estimated $14.8 million. Kester says she wants to discuss funding strategies at a committee of the whole meeting in July. Still, the Assembly's decision to undo the LID is not likely to alter a lawsuit brought by two riverfront property owners over the flood wall. Earlier this year, an Alaska Superior Court judge dismissed a portion of the lawsuit that challenged the city's local improvement district. The court said that part of the case wasn't ripe for a decision because the city hadn't finalized how much homeowners would have to pay. Samuel Hatch is one of the plaintiffs in the case. He hosts barriers in his backyard and says the city's decision to pay for the first phase of construction starts to address the fairness issue, but it won't influence him to drop the case.
Riverfront property owners are giving up a heck of a lot for this barrier to work. Even with CBJ paying to install it, you know, everyone's lost their view. Most everyone's lost almost their entire backyard. And what's making that fair or right?
He's still suing the city over compensation for the part of his land that's holding up the flood wall. Emily Wright, the city's attorney, says the core question in the case remains. Did the city take private property to host the HESCO barriers? Both the U.S. Constitution and the Alaska Constitution forbid the government from taking private land for public use without paying the owners.
The longer this project goes on, the more it becomes a permanent placement on someone's property versus just a temporary emergency response.
And if the flood wall looks permanent, Wright says it's more likely a judge will see it as a taking. The case is scheduled to go to trial in October. In Juneau, I'm Alex Solomon.
And the U.S. Forest Service closed the entrance to Juneau's Backloop Bridge Trail in Mendenhall Valley on Monday. A portion of the hiking area has become part of the Glacial Outburst Flood Wall Construction Zone. At a flood preparedness workshop at Thunder Mountain Middle School on Tuesday, staff at the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers said they're raising an 1,100-foot-long dirt berm parallel to the road. So far, they cleared a swath of trees where the berm will go. The trailhead closure should end July 25th. Ryder Newland is the mission manager for Phase 2 of the HESCO Barrier Project at the Army Corps. At the workshop, he pointed to a map of the berm on a large round table.
It's going to have erosion protection with rocks on the outside. A trail on the top is, yeah, it's just a berm.
He says it's meant to prevent flood water from breaking through the existing glacial moraines, crossing Backloop Road, and flowing into neighborhoods on the other side, including the Mendenhall River Community School. The flood hasn't taken that path before.
The majority of those moraines there are high enough already, as you guys have seen. But there's some gaps, and we're just filling those gaps.
The berm is part of the Army Corps and the City and Borough of Juneau's effort to build a wall that can withstand a flood about 30% larger than last year, though it wasn't in the original plan. Staff at the agency say their flood modeling shows the berm should not raise water heights on View Drive, an unprotected street with 18 houses on the opposite side of the river. The entire flood wall is still scheduled to be finished by July 15th. The goal is to finish before the next flood. Aaron Jacobs is a senior service hydrologist at the National Weather Service in Juneau. He says no one can predict exactly when the annual flood will happen. For the past 3 years, it's struck within the first 2 weeks of August. But as summer stretches on, he says scientists will be able to narrow in on a rough timeline for when Suicide Basin will fill to the top. That's the massive lake dammed by Mendenhall Glacier that causes the flood when it releases all at once.
Of course, right now, that window is very large, like that July 17th through August 21st.
Jacob said the window can change depending on temperatures and precipitation. A relatively hot, wet summer will fill the basin quicker than a cold, dry one. And earrings, especially made with traditional materials or complex beadwork, are emblems of contemporary Indigenous fashion, connectedness, and identity. And last week, more than 60 artists showed up in Juneau to sell their jewelry at Celebration, a days-long event that uplifts the survival and persistence of Tlingit, Haida, and Tsimshian cultures. And some attendees saved up for years to buy earrings for themselves and loved ones.
Dozens of stalls line the Otonane Hit Arts Plaza in Juneau, and the tables are piled with colorful beads, fur, bone, and shell jewelry, usually in sets of two. Brittany Woods Orison is wandering the market with a couple of friends, looking over the items laid out on each table. She says buying from Indigenous makers generates wealth that stays in Alaska.
You're keeping the abundance in the community, and then you have this really, you start building a connection with the people you have art from.
Woods Orison is from Rampart, or Tlet Tanits, a village on the Yukon River. After traveling from Fairbanks, where she lives now, she's being thoughtful about adding to her earring collection. She says there was a time in her life where she would spend more than $400 on a piece. Now, her monthly expenses are higher, so she's buying less and choosing carefully. And she's looking for pieces for young people in her family that they can pass down.
Gifting is more important now, too. I'm like, getting to my auntie age. It's time to start buying the nieces and nephews their inherited pieces.
And of course, the earrings look good. She says they can be an icebreaker for meeting other Native people outside Alaska, too.
Also, I always joke it's a bat signal for all the Natives when we're traveling in big cities. I'm like, oh, where are you from? Where'd you buy those?
Across the plaza, Kayla McCutcheon is behind a booth covered in earrings made from hand-smith metal hoops with tiny macrame designs in bright-colored thread. Earrings on display range from $50 to more than $100. She came from Sitka, and it's her first time selling at Celebration. Making jewelry is McCutcheon's full-time job.
This is, like, my first Celebration market, so I don't know how this will, like, impact kind of my year-round sales. But I would say that markets in general make up, like, 40% of my sales. So it's a pretty big amount.
She says she started weaving micro macrame for fun, but the business is in her blood.
My mom was a jeweler growing up, and she always, like, contributed to our household income by making art. And she was like, if you could turn this into earrings, you'll make a lot of money.
McCutcheon has been selling jewelry full-time for 7 years. She says she hired a babysitter to watch her 2-year-old daughter for about 10 hours a week so she could make as many earrings as possible in the months before Celebration. Outside of those hours, she stays up after her daughter's bedtime and weaves. She says the earring industry is huge in Southeast Alaska.
I don't think my business would be as successful as it is if I lived anywhere else in the world.
Earrings are a part of everyday life here, McCutcheon says.
You'll see somebody out on the boat in a sweatshirt and sweatpants and extra tufts wearing like caribou tufted, beaded dentalium earrings or like big bougie dangly raven tail.
And all over the market, shoppers are carefully picking through stalls, noting which they plan to come back to. Alaska Scaffold Stud holds up a bold pair of earrings to her ears. They're long, white ermine pelts with chains and shells sewn in. She talks with the artist and seller, Diamond Williams, who explains the cultural significance of the ermine, a small mammal with a camouflage coat.
Back in the day, our warriors used to wear it on their armor, and they had like a significant of like disappearing and...
I might just disappear into the night.
Kind of wear them as a statement piece.
Yeah, very much so. They're beautiful.
Williams is from Juneau, but lives in Anchorage. She travels across the western United States selling earrings at native markets. She says she needs to earn at least a couple $1,000s to make the trip to Celebration pay off financially. Her customer, Scaffold Stud, came to Celebration from Hoonah. She says she couldn't make it last time, so she had more time to save money to spend at the market.
Happy I can finally make it. Brought all my money.
She bought the ermine earrings for herself, which cost $250. But she wasn't done shopping. She wanted to buy gifts for family members, too.
It's very sentimental when you buy something that's handmade and then from like a local artist that it's their living and then you get to share it with your friend.
Williams said she earned enough on the first day of Celebration alone to make the trip to Juneau from Anchorage worth it. In Juneau, I'm Yvonne Crumry. And as for the weather here in Juneau, it's 61 and mostly cloudy this afternoon. It looks like we may see a little bit of rain. There's a 30% chance this afternoon and tonight. Tomorrow, it looks like it might dry out again with a high of 60 degrees. Friday also looks sunny with a high of 63. This weekend, it looks like it could be a little bit rainy and a little bit cloudy, with temperatures from the low 50s to the mid 60s. This is KTOO. Thank you for tuning in.